Listener support powers the coverage from WFAE that you rely on in good times and bad. As reporters and producers keep you updated on the coronavirus and its impact on the community, we hope that you'll consider a donation to WFAE at WFAE.org or by calling 704-549-9000. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The coronavirus has changed life as we know it, and it has shifted our priorities. So on this Politics Monday, we examine its impact on our elections. In normal times, this would be primary election season, and the various political races would be getting a lot more of all of our attention. But politics as a horse race has completely disappeared. 9 states have postponed their primaries. Ohio has elected to hold its primary completely by mail. North Carolina's Elections Board is also asking lawmakers for help in ensuring elections can continue, including providing support for an anticipated surge in voting by mail. Indeed, some health officials fear that even if we get through this phase of the COVID-19 pandemic, there is a potential for it to return this fall with a peak around Election Day. Cracks in our election infrastructure have been exposed. What steps are needed to shore it up before November? Jerry Cohen is a Wake County Board of Elections member and former legislative counsel for the North Carolina General Assembly. He joins us for the hour. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Nice to have you with us. He is here along with Tammy Patrick. She is Elections Program Senior Advisor for the Democracy Fund, which invests in organizations working to ensure that our political system is able to withstand new challenges. She was formerly with the Bipartisan Policy Center, which works to promote the recommendations of the Presidential Commission on Election Administration. Thank you for joining us. She joins us, by the way, from Southern Maryland. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Mirna Perez is director of the Voting Rights and Elections Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. She, too, is at home. Where are you this morning, Mirna?
I'm in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here, all three of you. We appreciate it. Tammy, let me start with you, because I mentioned moments ago you work for the Democracy Fund to ensure that our political system can withstand new challenges. Is this COVID-19 outbreak the biggest challenge yet?
I think it probably is. It certainly is the biggest challenge we've seen in my lifetime, and probably in at least the last almost century or so. There have been challenges in discrete areas of the country in the past, but this is really something that's had the widest impact and something that's challenging all elections everywhere across the country, really around the globe.
And I'm being told that we have now 11 states that have delayed their primaries. So, Mirna, when we think of state primaries, the 11 that have been postponed and the others that are on the calendar, I suppose, we tend to think about the presidential race and that contest, at least this year on the Democratic side. But there are races up and down the ballot on this ticket, federal, state, local races that are being impacted by this. Little to no attention is being focused on most political races at the moment. Candidates can't campaign. Do you worry that the election and many of the candidates are going to get lost in all of this? And what would be the impact of that if that happened?
I'm worried on behalf of the voters, not so much as on behalf of the candidates. I think what we need to remember is that the elections are the way that we resolve political differences in this country. It is the way that we, as a larger country, decide the direction that we are going to go in. And we need to make sure that we are prepared to have elections that are free, fair, and safe. People need to make sure that they have an opportunity to be able to participate, and they're not having to choose between their health and their representative government, their republic. And I think the primaries give us an opportunity to figure out where in the system do we have gaps? Where are there places where we can improve? Because we have a lot of time between now and November, and there should be a giant alarm bell ringing across the country that our election administrators need resources, that we need to do a lot of advanced planning, and that we need to account for the fact that our communities are really diverse and are going to have very diverse needs if we are going to move forward and have an election in November, which we must have, that everyone feels good about and feels that was done the best way possible in light of the circumstances that we're in. I think it is too early. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jerry, North Carolina had its primary, obviously, on Super Tuesday, but I think there's another primary in some parts of the state coming up. And, of course, the general election in November. Are alarm bells going off, as Miranda just mentioned, at least in North Carolina? Is there a more lax attitude? Because I know there's some opposition to voting by mail. Has that lessened a little bit in the face of all this in North Carolina?
Well, the State Board of Elections has made 15 recommendations for improving access to the polls this fall, including changes in our mail balloting. And I want to make it clear I'm speaking only on my own behalf, not on the board I'm a member of or the state. Wake County, 4 years ago, Wake is now the largest county in the state, a couple thousand people and voters more than Mecklenburg. We had about 28,000 mail ballots cast in 2016, about 5% of our 500,000 votes cast. Our county will probably have 100,000 more registered voters this year than 4 years ago. And, you know, we're starting to anticipate we may have 100,000 mail ballots cast, which is an enormous volume. This is assuming the state doesn't somehow go to all mail balloting, which the other states that have done so with 3 to 5 years of lead time, not 3 to 5 months. So yes, we're getting prepared, and elections are expensive as well.
Well, let's talk about some of those other states, because according to the New York Times, in Rhode Island, the Secretary of State wants all 788,000 registered voters to receive absentee ballot applications. In Maryland, the special election to replace the late Elijah Cummings will be conducted by mail. Ohio is conducting their primary by mail. And there are states all over the country are trying to ensure that the November election comes off. Five states, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Hawaii, and Utah, already conduct their elections by mail. So, Tammy, are there problems with this procedure? I mean, Jerry just mentioned that those states took years to get ready for mail-in-only elections. But where they have made that transition, are there problems, or is it pretty smooth?
So I think you really delineated the two kind of classes of vote by mail elections that we have in this country right now. You have those that need to have an application in order to participate and those that automatically receive a ballot. And that really is a big distinction because, as Jerry mentioned, if you have hundreds of thousands of ballot applications to process in addition to hundreds of thousands of ballots to get out, it kind of doubles your fun. It doubles the work and doubles the amount of interaction that your staff has to have in order to get that voter a ballot. So for full disclosure, I came from Arizona where I was a local election official for more than a decade, and we had between 65 and 70% of our voters receive their ballot by mail. It was a transition over a period of time, and vote by mail has traditionally been sort of an evolution across the country. And what tends to happen in most places is that once the excuse requirement is removed, like we've seen in Michigan, for example, once that excuse requirement is removed, voters tend to start using it more frequently. As it escalates, then it tends to get to the point where the local election officials, if you have 40, 50% of your electorate voting by mail, it's hard to process those applications timely enough to get the ballots out to voters. And that's what we're seeing, an escalation of the timelines under the COVID situation. So in Wisconsin right now, they're under a crush of applications, literally working 12 hours a day trying to get the thousands of ballot applications processed. And unfortunately, those application process being processed now for their primary may not also be used for the November, so they have to do it again.
So, Jerry, from North Carolina's point of view, would it be easier just to send every registered voter, because you have our addresses, every registered voter a ballot by mail, or would it be easier for the state simply to respond to requests for mail-in absentee ballots?
Well, you know, the process of, let's deal with the first part of your question first. There's something called a ballot style, which is a combination, like in Wake County, of state house, state senate, district court, superior court, Congress, and municipal elections. Wake will have probably close to 100 different ballots this year. Mecklenburg, probably the same. So the process, even if we were to send them all out, the process of making sure everyone gets one, the correct ballot, is extremely time consuming. But part of your question, we have everyone's address. That's not really true. This is a 4-year cycle. This is about the low point of the cycle. And Wake County, for instance, typically will receive in the month before the registration deadline this October, we've received 50 to 75,000 new registrations and an equal number or more of address changes within the county. So if you just mailed everybody a ballot in late September, you'd probably miss 100,000 people who are just registering and 100,000 people within the county who had people update their address every 4 years. It's not high on the list. It's slightly below telling DMV you've moved, which is only when you get your renewal every 8 years.
Right.
So it's very tedious to send them all out. We'd have to account for all the people with address changes and moves. There'd still need to be some sort of election day thing. Our early voting period, we'll generally get statewide 100,000 new voters registering during that period. They wouldn't have gotten a mail ballot. And the other issue is return postage. Access to post offices, if COVID-19 is continuing to shut things down, unless return postage is paid, unless there's online applications, and many people in our state don't have access to good mail service, access to post offices, rural areas. The application and ballot process is very tedious. I'm not sure if a college education teaches you how to fill out all those forms.
Wow. We're going to talk about some of the changes that some people have put forth in North Carolina for this purpose, to make that an easier process, in a moment. It actually shocks me to hear that you're saying that after, 200 and some years of the country, that the mail service is difficult to get in some parts of the region.
No, and that is critical. That is critical. There are communities in our country that have entirely unreliable mail service. The one that people are waking up to is on Native American reservations, where the addresses will not typically coincide with the way the post office understands addresses to be. But if you live in a giant public housing development, if you live in a really rural area, if you live in a really urban congested area, you are less likely to get reliable mail service. And I think one of the things we need to be super careful about is that we don't bake existing inequities in the system, i.e. lack of government services like the mail service, into our representative democracy. So those same folks are not in a position to be able to change the way the government responds to them.
This, Tammy, is why you say time is of the essence to get this thing underway if we need to. Should all states be making plans for this right now, whether they use those plans or not?
I think they absolutely should. So, even for states where you need a reason or an excuse to vote by mail, those states are seeing huge increases in voters applying for a vote by mail ballot for both this election in the springtime and then also for the upcoming November, when they're able to make the application hold true for elections throughout the whole year. So everyone is seeing a massive increase, and depending on how this plays out, it will continue. And I think that the other two guests are absolutely spot on. The number one thing we need to be contemplating now, especially in those states where maybe they've already done their primary, is to be thinking about voter registration. And Myrna mentioned the challenges with addresses in Indian country. And that's something that I've been working on for the last year or so with the Native American Voting Rights Fund and the Postal Service. So there's both this challenge of the voter registration list and placing the voters and having the right address. And then there's the challenge with the actual delivery of the ballot to the voter.
And let me stop you there. We have to take a break. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guests today include Mirna Perez, Director of Voting Rights and Elections Programming for the Brennan Center for Justice. Jerry Cohen is a member of the Wake County Board of Elections and a former legislative counsel to the North Carolina General Assembly. And Tammy Patrick is Election Program Senior Advisor for the Democracy Fund and formerly with the Elections Department in Maricopa County in Arizona, where the famous sheriff is from. I had to interrupt you, Tammy, on your answer about the difficulties that all states might have with regard to getting ready for an all mail-in ballot election in November. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's quite all right. I think that what every state needs to be contemplating right now is a massive increase in applications and or voters requesting to receive their ballot that way. They need to be talking to their print vendors, their mailhouse vendors. They need to be talking about whether or not there's a capacity there. Oftentimes people say, well, you're already printing up a ballot that you're handing to a voter on election day at the polls or during early voting. What's the difference between that and mailing it out to them? A huge difference. As Jerry mentioned, you have to get the voter the exact right ballot for what they are eligible to vote on. And that can be done in time as the voters come through voting in person. But if you're mailing everyone a ballot, it all has to be done at the same time. And you have all these additional printing costs of multiple envelopes, return envelopes, voting instructions, secrecy sleeves in some states. So all of these things take time, they take resources, they take energy. And the one plea that I have for states across the country is as you scale up, because you're going to be scaling up, make sure you're adopting the best practices and good design so that voters understand what the instructions are and they have the right expectations set.
Mirna,
making sure that things happen in language and that there's assistance for folks who may prefer or appreciate help at the polls, but they're able to get that not at the polling locations.
So the Democratic Party, Mirna, is urging the remaining primary states to use a variety of mechanisms to make voting easier and safer, and they feel that the simplest way is to vote by mail. 33 states in the District of Columbia currently collect ballots by mail or permit no excuse absentee ballot voting. What would it take to make that happen in states where that is not the norm?
Okay, I want to be clear. We're a 501c3. We're not aligning ourselves with any particular political party. But
right.
What does need to happen is that all of our states need to expand opportunities to vote by mail and make sure that voters have an accessible way of getting a ballot. We would also say that there are going to be some segment of the population for a whole bunch of reasons that are going to need to be present on election day, and they're going to need to be in a polling location. And some of the energy needs to be spent on making sure that our polling places can operate in a safe way, in a clean way, in a sanitized way, in a way of making sure that folks are able to in a helpful way. And that means also ensuring that people are up to speed on the right kind of sanitizing processes, making sure that they have enough space and locations to account for social distancing, making sure that the poll workers are appropriately trained as to how to stay far away from somebody, but nonetheless help people. There's a lot of things that need to gear up between now and then. And I think we can do it. We do have the time.
Yeah.
To get to work immediately.
So what I heard you say, and you broke up a little bit, is that you think that all states ought to have a combination of mail-in and in some cases leave polls open where possible, where polling places open where possible. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, one of the things that happens is in a time like this, voters need more options, not fewer.
Okay.
We constrict the number of options. We're going to need more options if we're going to bring everybody into our electorate and give them a meaningful opportunity to participate. I'm hearing some folks try and use this this crisis as a way of shutting down polling locations, which is not going to serve all of our communities, because there are plenty of communities for a whole myriad of reasons that are going to want to show up and vote on election day in person.
So, Jerry, Mirna is making the case that many others have made, that there are those who advocate making voting as easy as possible, even during normal election years, but others seem intent on putting up barriers to that. The Republican legislature here has tried to require voter ID. Many view that as a barrier to voting. Would this legislature, the one currently sitting in Raleigh, be reluctant to permit statewide no-excuse voting by mail, at least for the duration of this epidemic, or would that be difficult for them to do? Would they have trouble doing that?
Well, North Carolina dropped its excuse requirement for mail balloting the same year it instituted early voting, which was 1999. So we no longer have an excuse requirement. That doesn't mean it's a simple process, however, for the voter. And so I think having a combination of different methods, like I say, we expect probably five times as many mail ballots. Wake and Mecklenburg, our larger counties, have county commissioners that have been willing to fund elections, but we're going to have problems this year if county revenues have dropped. Counties may try to retrench their budgets.
Yeah.
Our County Board of Elections budget, not counting early voting this current fiscal year, is over $8 million. Early voting for our 20 sites for our presidential election is probably going to cost $2 million. We have 4,000 poll workers in Wake County likely this fall. Recruiting them is an issue. Our average age of poll workers is 70, according to the State Board of Elections statewide.
If we make it as easy as possible to vote by mail in North Carolina is for this election because of the extraordinary circumstances, is there a fear floating around in Raleigh that this is something that might catch on and voters would demand in perpetuity?
Well, I can't speak to whether the legislature would or would not approve something. I think they have been... Our budget for our State Board of Elections, I think there's more funding going to be needed if we move to more mail balloting. The State Board has requested that return postage be paid.
Yeah.
Well, if we have a million votes by mail, that's several million dollars statewide just to deal with all of that.
But don't you think the federal government, there are franking privileges in the Congress where Congress people can mail for free. How much of a burden, how likely would it be that the federal government would say, okay, mail-in ballots are prepaid, postage-free at the federal level. Don't worry about it, states.
Well, maybe that would be in the fourth stimulus bill. But right now, there isn't any such. I know that I'm not sure how election mail, it's the same. Our county pays the same postage rate as others. Our postal service has been deliberately starved by Congress. We had absentee ballot, one of my jobs is reviewing the envelopes that come in. We have to review, our five-member board has to review every envelope that comes in. So, I signed up for that. If there's 100,000, that's what I'll be doing this fall. But I think I've lost your question, but it's not a simple process.
Myrna and Tammy both want to chime in on this. Myrna, go ahead.
What I would say is that Jerry's bringing up an excellent point, which is that our elections need more resources, period. They need more resources under the best of circumstances, and they certainly need more resources under the worst of circumstances. If we are going to have a top flight democracy, we as a country need to be willing to pay for it. And that means making sure that our election administrators at the local level have what they need to be able to conduct a free, fair, and secure election. And right now we have additional challenges that can in many ways be mitigated by an infusion of resources. If people are worried that they can't find poll workers, pay poll workers more. If people are worried that they don't have the opportunity to be able to process mail ballot applications with existing staff, we can hire more. And we need legislators at all levels of government to remember that elections are critical infrastructure and that we need to make sure that they're operating well.
Tammy.
Yeah, it's often said that you can have elections that are fast, that are cheap, or accurate, and you can pick two. So if you want it to be fast and accurate, it's not going to be cheap. And I think that those are really salient points to make. There was a good study that was done just recently by Auburn University of county budgets, and it looked at the elections department portion of county budgets. And for their sample that they drew from Election Center, which is the National Association of Election Officials members, the county elections department budgets were less than one half of 1% of the county's budget. It's minimal. It's so small. And I think that that's really important when we talk about the voting options. And it's also to recognize nationally that the return of the ballots, which is something we should talk about as well, because we're talking about prepayment of the postage. But in reality, the majority of voters get their ballot by mail, but they tend to want to drop them off in person, either at a polling place, at a drop box. And so the return ballot option for prepayment may shift somewhat under COVID, but we do have an established protocol for doing that. The Congress pays for the return ballots and outbound ballots to military and overseas voters under UACAVA. So there's, which is the Uniform Overseas Citizens and Absentee Voting Act. So there's questions about whether or not we could just expand that program to also service the domestic voters. And really, when we talk about the return of the ballot, I think it's important to look at the state laws that require a voter's reliance on others. So we need to restore voters' autonomy in the ability to mark their own ballot, return their own ballot without a notary, without witnessing requirements, because you're subjecting them to putting their ability to vote in their ability to be in contact closely with another person. So these are all best practices that are kind of being laid out across the country.
And Jerry, last Thursday, the State Board of Elections asked legislative leaders and the governor to make it easier for people to vote absentee by mail, but because of this pandemic. And the elections director, executive director, Karen Brinson Bell, sent a 6-page letter asking, among other things, that the state eliminate the requirement that a mail ballot be witnessed by two people or a notary, that the state pay for postage, and she suggested that the state make Election Day in November a holiday, a state holiday. What are the chances that any or all of that could happen here?
Well, North Carolina, up until about 10 years ago, North Carolina required just one witness, and then it was changed to two or a notary, which also, by the way, made the envelope a lot more complicated. I don't know the willingness. We had the fraud last year in the 9th district, which was a small number of people with a fraudulent scheme. I would hate for that to make it hard for millions to vote.
Well, that fraud led, I think, to a tightening of the absentee ballot rules. Is the legislature likely to now turn around and loosen them because they want to prevent that from happening again, obviously?
Well, there's 15 recommendations. I have that 6-page letter. There's 15 recommendations. Some things can be made simpler, I think, without increasing the likelihood of fraud. But, you know, if we drop back to one witness, you know, the notary thing, it's either two witnesses or a notary. Well, if you can't find two witnesses, you're probably not going to be able to find a notary. So that's a totally superfluous thing. You know, I'm not trying to advocate for changes one way or the other, but just like right now, you have to mail in your request. It used to be you could fax or email it in. We don't even have an online option for requesting ballots. You know, the process of to have to mail in your request and find a stamp. I know there are jokes about young people never mailing anything, but that's true. The mention was overseas voters. My son and daughter-in-law, while she was in grad school in England, she said it was a lot easier to vote from England than it was to vote here because the UACAVA process made it easier. They could scan and email their ballot back to, in her case, the Orange County Board of Elections, much easier than standing in line to vote. So we have greatly improved access for overseas and military, and I think we need to, in return, make it easier access for people here.
Are there dangers if the legislature allowed people to scan their finished ballot and then email a PDF to the elections board or whatever, or fax it to them? Are there hacking concerns with that? Because that's where a vote would touch the internet.
Well, I don't advocate that in any way for civilians. Okay. North Carolina allows that for military and overseas. About 90% of our military, of our overseas, and 75% of our military ballots come back via email or fax. Right. We then have to transcribe those to another ballot. because those won't run through the tabulator, and all of that transcribing has to be reviewed by every member of our Board of Elections. So I don't know if we had a million of those, I'm not sure how that would even work. So I don't advocate people emailing or using the internet for their ballot if they're here in the country. I advocate making it easier to vote in person or by mail.
The one of the strengths, and I guess also one of the weaknesses of the American election system, Miren, is the fact that it is administered by states and local municipalities. There's no federal location demanding anything about anything. Every ballot is different. Every process is different. Every precinct practically is different. And that makes it highly unhackable to a certain degree. But could the federal government step in this case and mandate that every state have mail-in ballots? Should we be in a stay-at-home period like we are now this coming November?
Okay, well, there's a bunch of things in your question. There are a number of provisions of our Constitution that permit the federal government to set floors for what states are doing. For example, the right to be able to step into the ballot box and be free from discrimination. The election clause that allows Congress to set standards for federal elections. So there are a number of things that Congress can do. We do benefit from having a diversity of state practices because that allows for there to be a laboratory and for people to borrow best practices and see what works for someone else. But what I think is critical in all of this is remembering that there is, if there's any silver lining, it's the fact that we need to have strong resiliency and contingency plans for things that go wrong. Like Tammy mentioned, this is unlike anything we've ever seen, but we do see hurricanes, and we do see tornadoes, and we do see Russian cyber criminals. We see lots of things that can make our elections vulnerable. And we need to do the advanced planning to be able to account for all of these emergency scenarios. And this hopefully will be a jumpstart of something that we should have done decades ago that will give us some building blocks for when we have the next crisis that comes.
Tammy, have a minute left in this segment. And I'm wondering, if you have both mail-in ballots and you have polls open, what is to prevent somebody from going in and voting twice? They send their ballot in and then they go to the polls. What's to prevent that?
Yeah, so the prevention that's in place already all across the country is that if a voter is reflected in the register or roster where they sign in, whether it's on paper or an electronic poll book, it usually demonstrates that they've either requested a ballot or they've returned their ballot. In those cases, some states allow the voter to turn over the ballot they received by mail and then go ahead and vote in person. In other places, that voter is provided a provisional ballot, and then the election official determines whether or not the voter had already returned their ballot. So there's absolutely safety protocols already in place.
Tammy Patrick is Elections Program Senior Advisor with the Democracy Fund. She's here with Jerry Cohen from the Wake County Board of Elections and Mirna Perez, Director of the Voting Rights and Elections Program at the Brennan Center.
Your questions answered on the latest episode of Inside Politics, the RNC in Charlotte. Will the convention even take place this August? And will North Carolina make it easier to vote by mail if the coronavirus pandemic hasn't subsided?
What they do is mail to every registered voter a ballot without request. So that's a change in our law.
Listen to Inside Politics, the RNC in Charlotte on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, and WFAE.org/InsidePolitics.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about voting in a time of COVID-19 and making it easier to vote, and primarily using mail-in ballots to do so here and around the country. Jerry Cohen is a member of the Wake County Board of Elections. Tammy Patrick, Elections Program Senior Advisor with the Democracy Fund. And Mirna Perez is Director of Voting Rights and Elections Programming at the Brennan Center for Justice. And Mirna, the Brennan Center estimates that it would cost about $1.4 billion to prepare this country for a national election with mail-in ballots.
That was a preliminary estimate. We actually think it's closer to $2 billion.
Okay, and that's more than the ordinary election would cost, or in addition to what the ordinary election would cost?
It's hardening the election against a coronavirus crisis and dealing with the way that things are going to need to change and how they're going to have to scale up.
And so you're estimating between $1.4 and $2 billion. The Congress, in the stimulus package that they passed, put forth or set aside $400 million, which is three-quarters to less to a quarter of what is actually needed. Were they aware of that when they passed that?
Yeah, we're, I mean, we're glad that that number has upped from what it initially was. That is a higher number than what we got earlier, but we still need to be pushing to try and get more money out there. And it's important that it be done quickly, because as something that both Tammy and Jerry have mentioned, if we're going to make this election go off without a hitch, people need to get resources and start doing the planning for it now. But I also want to remind folks that state legislatures can also help some of this, right? They can also allocate more money to their elections. And this is something that we're all in this as a country, and we all need to be in it as part of the solution. And it's not, we can't be pointing fingers and saying X or Y needs to do it. We all need to play our part. You know, making sure that the states are on board in addition to Congress is an important part of that, because the election administrators are doing everything they can right now with what they have. To make pull this off, but they are not miracle workers. They're dedicated public servants, but they're not miracle workers.
So, Jerry, in North Carolina, do we have any idea what it would cost us to convert to mail-in only ballots for an election cycle?
I haven't seen any exact numbers, but North Carolina has about 7 million voters as of 2016, so it's probably going to be 7.5 million or more voters to mail that many ballots out. You're talking about it's probably at least $10-12 million to do a mail out, I would think, not to mention processing the 80% of those that came back. So it's a very large number, and to say
do we have that money in normal years, and particularly in a year where revenues are most likely going to be down because everything is closed and taxes will not be collected?
Well, if the legislature appropriates the money, then we have the money.
Yeah, but the state, the state can't go into debt like the federal government can. So do we have that money?
Right now, the money to do an all-mail ballot election in North Carolina is not there. You know, in Wake County, we're running 206 polling places. There's only so much you can cut out. If you cut out thousands of poll workers, then your lines balloon, and then people are all together waiting in line, which, of course, is exactly contrary to what we're trying to do. So all-mail ballot isn't cheap. I don't have an actual estimate. But as I mentioned, there's the problem with registration lists, all the voter registration that's still going on and will be going on this fall. I don't assume, somebody earlier said, we have a list of all the voters. Well, I don't think we have a list of all the people. A list that's 3 and 4 years out of date.
One of the things that I read about this weekend is that there might be it might be difficult to verify signatures on a mail-in ballot. Now, when we vote in Mecklenburg County, we go and we sit in front of somebody who verifies our address, and they hand me a piece of paper, and I put my signature on it, and I hand it back to them. I don't know what happens to that piece of paper, but then I go and vote. So I don't know who verifies my signature on that piece of paper, Tammy, but how is that different from a signature on a mail-in ballot?
So states vary in how they go about signature verification. Some states, it's as minimal as, is there a signature? Other states utilize banking software to compare the signatures with a signature of record, say on their voter registration or on the ballot application, with that which was on the affidavit that's on that envelope. And yet others have a physical review by a person. So I myself have probably signature verified tens of thousands of signatures and on ballots in Arizona. And I did so after having forensic signature training. So it's not that you're looking for a signature to be an exact match. It's that you look at the tendencies of line orientation, slant and slope, and all of these things that kind of play into how someone signs. Mm-hmm. And you also want to make sure that for those states that have signature verification that are doing it, they also audit to make sure they don't have what I call acceptors and rejectors. Someone who just accepts everything, that's not secure, or someone who rejects everything, and that's not secure either.
Are there more?
People can be trained the way that law enforcement and folks who have to examine forgers are trained. And again, this gets back to the idea of resources and planning.
Yeah. In the United States, we're used to TV networks proclaiming the results of elections at the moment the polls close, in many cases, even before the votes have been counted. But even when they're waiting for the votes to be counted, except in some recent cases, it usually happens pretty quickly. Counting mail-in ballots, it would seem to me, takes a much longer time. Some say that we might need days, maybe weeks, to process the results of an election from all mail-in ballots. Would that be a problem, Tammy, other than delayed gratifications for network television viewers?
So this has been one of my mantras as well as we talk about vote by mail, is that absolutely we're going to need some more patience. But there are ways that you can set up the system to be successful. And one of the ways you can do that, and this is what the vast majority of states that have a lot of vote by mail do, is they begin the processing of those ballots well in advance of election day. The reason that we saw such a challenge in places like Michigan, they can't start processing those ballot envelopes, of which they had almost a million, until the morning of election day. That absolutely is going to delay results. But if you allow the election officials to begin processing those ballots, doing the signature verification, doing the extraction of the ballots from the envelopes, just contemplate how much time, and that's one of the things we've been talking a lot about, the focus on costs monetarily. Time is of the essence. Think about taking something out of an envelope, millions and millions and millions of them all across the country. That takes time. And so we're running out of time. I tend to picture the sands of an hourglass, because when we talk about the extraction of ballots, inserting ballots to mail them out, there are ways to do that more quickly. There are definitely equipment that can be purchased, but procurement at a county and municipal level takes a lot of time. It could be anywhere from, best case scenario, 3 months to 6 months to get that machinery, even if you have the money to pay for it. Wow. And they aren't cheap.
So Jerry, civil rights advocates, go ahead.
This is Jerry.
Yeah.
I would say in North Carolina, we start processing ballots and start processing ballots several weeks in advance of the election. But the enormous mountain of ballots come in at the last minute. And we allow ballots to come in for 3 days after the election if they're postmarked on time. And the other thing is, this is not a baseball game. There's not an end to the ninth inning while you're still in the stadium. So some of the changes, we don't finish counting ours till 10 days after the election. One of the state recommendations is change that to 14. But the type of voters that vote late are very different. I looked this year, the average age of male voters in North Carolina was 64. The average age of our ballots, the voters, the ballots that came in the day or two after the election was 45. The average age, the median age of the ballots that came in the very last day was 29. Younger voters wait till the last minute, and also their political behavior is different. So, you know, other people think, oh, that must mean cheating is going on. No, it's people that don't have access to stamps or envelopes or whatever, or take longer. There's a different demographic, I'll just say.
Civil rights advocates. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go now, Michael. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, Merida. Civil rights advocates are concerned about moving this election to beyond the watchful eye of poll workers, because sometimes they can discern discrimination, or doing so would provide opportunities, some say, for discrimination. Why would that be? Mail-in ballots increasing discrimination.
Well, for one, it's the issue of the mail delivery, which is something that we discussed, that not every community has equal access to mail. Other, it has to do with folks who have the specific language or other needs. For example, folks in the disability community who may have visual or physical impairments may have a hard time filling out a unmodified mail ballot and rely on technology that exists at polling locations in order to be able to do that. You have people who are low information voters who may not understand what it is that is involved in turning a mail ballot. And then you have communities where the right to vote was very hardly very hardly won and very hardly earned. And they want, as a practical, tangible manner, to be able to go in and have the security of, pushing a ballot, submitting it, and being confident that they don't have to rely on the mail for their fundamental right to vote count. And that is one of the reasons that we as a country need to make sure that we have lots of options open and that we're talking to our voters.
Are there fears among some that mail-in ballots from certain zip codes might be tossed aside, put aside, not counted?
There's going to be all sorts of fears, but what we do know, and studies have shown, that some communities trust their mail delivery more than others, right? And some communities get better mail. I mean, people may be shocked, your readers may be shocked to know that I actually have to go to a mailbox in order to get outgoing mail. I do not have a mailbox in my very urban area of Jersey City where someone can take my outgoing mail. I have to walk out of my house and find an open post office or have a mail drop-off box. And I think that live in a world where they're used to being able to put up a flag and have, the viable post office man coming in and picking it up and dropping it off, don't understand that not everybody in the country lives that way. And we need to make sure that we have a solution for all of us, not for some of us.
I don't know who to ask this next question of, but I'm curious as to if any of you think that switching to a mail-in ballot might somehow change the outcome of the election. In other words, if COVID-19 was not a problem and we went to November and we got an outcome, would that outcome be different from a mail-in ballot, which may encourage people who don't normally vote because they can't get out of the house? Maybe they would vote in this. And it seems to me that that might change how the demographics of all this work, because older people generally vote more often than younger people. Older people are used to using the mail. That might impact the Republican turnout more favorably than the Democratic turnout. And there are other things that might affect the Democratic turnout more than the Republican turnout. Could this change the outcome?
So I'll jump in there. I think that if we look historically across the country, as vote by mail has increased, it has not changed dramatically the electorate outcomes. So in most cases across the country, you have those individuals who either sign up for a permanent absentee list, for example, that is correspondent to the electorate on the voter rolls in the same proportion from one party over the other. I haven't seen anywhere where moving to a vote by mail situation has changed the outcome of the election. And I think that it's really important. It ties back to the quality of the voter rolls. We're in a presidential election cycle where traditionally third party groups, candidates, political parties, supervisors and auditors of our elections are usually out at the county fairs doing voter registration and making sure people's contact information is updated and correct. We aren't seeing that kind of activity, and it's quite possible we won't see that kind of activity as this year plays out. So it'll be even more incumbent upon those groups as well as the voters to make sure that their information is accurate and current, that we're able to reach people where they are, and where they are right now is at home. So making sure that the list is accurate so that for those places that are sending out information to keep voters apprised of their options, which is really critical, that is the correct information. Because we know that voters are isolated, they are frustrated, they're feeling powerless, because we all are feeling that way. And we want to make sure that everyone understands that their vote is still their voice. And we're going to do everything we can this November to make sure it's heard.
So the newly formed National Task Force on Election Crises issued an 11-page guide for this pandemic, for voting in this pandemic. It is a bipartisan group. They recommend the expansion of voting by mail, creating more time to vote in person by extending hours and the number of days for early voting, keeping polling sites sanitized, creating distance inside polling sites so that we can keep social distance. And they suggest that we consider changing voter locations to move them away from places that might be close to those most at risk. Is the North Carolina Board of Elections, Jerry, on board with that? And I have 30 seconds.
Well, North Carolina is looking at all those various issues. Everything has a cause and effect. If you currently have a polling location with 30 booths in it, if people mark it by hand and suddenly you're separating by 6 feet and you can only have five people in the polling place, then your lines are going to be exponentially longer. So everything has to be carefully considered and balance on size, locations, etc. It's just a moving set of gears, and nothing exists on its own.
A lot to think about and a lot to do in a very short amount of time with a lot of question marks after everything. Jerry Cohen, member of the Wake County Board of Elections, Tammy Patrick, Elections Program Senior Advisor with the Democracy Fund, and Mirna Perez, Director of Voting Rights and Elections Programming at the Brennan Center for Justice. Thank you all for the hour.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.